Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Justice Antonin Scalia's courtroom chair has been draped in black to mark his death as part of a Supreme Court tradition that dates to the 19th century. Scalia died Saturday at age 79. His unexpected death has left the fate of the high court hanging in the balance. President Obama has vowed to nominate a successor. Senate Republicans have vowed to block it until the next president takes office. And the various candidates for president in 2016 are lining up on either side. The appointment of a liberal justice will completely shift the balance of the court in Democrats' favor. The appointment of a conservative would maintain the current conservative-leaning balance. Regardless of who ultimately is nominated, that person will hold all the cards. Alan Chartok is here with us today, and so is Albany law professor and constitutional law scholar Stephen Gottlieb. So let's talk Supreme Court politics today. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Alan Chartok, welcome back to the program. It's been a while.
And you are, of course, the Iron Man. You've done so much. I mean, you're on in the morning, you're on in the afternoon.
Well, it's the steroids.
As soon as one of us fails, you're there to pick up the pieces. You're terrific.
That's what I do. I'm a piece picker-upper. And also with us today is Stephen Gottlieb. Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, Ray.
Well, big news this weekend, and it was about, I think, 5 o'clock, 5:30 Saturday afternoon when the news broke that Justice Antonin Scalia had died. And since then, it has, wow, it didn't take long for the political football to be kicked around. Alan, let's start with you. And, well, before we get to the politics, I guess you can't really separate the politics. All right, you go ahead, sir.
You know, you are prescient in addition to all of your other skills, because it's exactly what I wanted to talk about and where I think I may have a difference with Professor Gottlieb. And here's why. You know, I think the Supreme Court is a political branch. It's the third branch of government. Keeps telling Congress it can do things, it can't do things. It keeps changing the rules. It has the power, and Steve and I have talked about this before, of the Ayatollah in Iran saying, okay, you will have an elected government, but we'll have the final say here. And so I think Stephen gives it far more respect than I do in terms of the way in which they deal with their legal nomenclature to sort of cover their political instincts. And that's what I want to start by saying.
All right.
Over to you, Steve.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't consider disagreeing with you, Alan.
But not if you want to be on
good.
Tomorrow.
That's
right.
Your point.
No, I'm kidding. But it varies from case to case and from court to court. Yes, I think this is a very political court. There are cases which are unanimous in which the law determines, as it's been written down and understood before, the law determines what the results will be. There are a lot of cases, however, and that's true particularly on the Supreme Court, that aren't that clear. The court in the 20s was given the power to say which cases they would handle. And immediately the number of dissents began to skyrocket. And there was a...
Why?
Because instead of just... I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Instead of just getting sort of run-of-the-mill, ordinary cases that somebody didn't like the result in, they were now getting cases that were picked because they were important. Hmm. And that resulted in profound disagreements among the justices. So, for example, Holmes and Brandeis were famous for dissenting, and it would often be said, Holmes and Brandeis dissenting, and the other seven members in the other way.
Is that when, and Alan, you jump in here too, is that the point in the 20s when the politics began to play a much bigger role in the Supreme Court?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Now, that's not to say that people's sort of philosophy didn't have an important part to play in the 19th century. It's just that the cases were much rarer in which that was a significant part of the issue. Obviously, a case like Dred Scott was all about where people were on the slavery issue. But the John Marshall Court was about creating a nation. And there were some people at that point that were very upset with that.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551 if you don't want to join Stephen Gottlieb and Alan Chartok in this conversation today. Alan, where do you see this political process going in the next 10 months, the final 10 of President Obama's term?
This is huge. And I'll tell you why. First of all, both sides are playing a wicked game of ping pong or chess here. I think the Republicans are making a terrible mistake because basically they've said the constitutional responsibility, which is supposed to be given to the president to name a justice, has been negated. Somebody wrote me a letter this morning and said if they can't make any decisions, if they're not allowed to make any decisions because they don't have a ninth justice on, then what about all those Republican senators who are in the majority? They shouldn't be making any decisions either because it's the last year of the president's term and their coordinate branch of government. I think it's nonsense. And I think that they're making a big mistake because they have all of these Senate seats that they have to defend as opposed to the last time when the Democrats were in that situation. And if they have to do that, and they can't because people are saying, you guys aren't playing fair. That's not right. And as for the president, let me just say, I think it's the president's responsibility to try to get somebody through a Republican Senate. And the way you do that is to appoint somebody who is a moderate, most likely a Republican, and basically somebody who will vote on the president's side. You got to play the political game here. I had at least two letters this morning that said nonsense. He should appoint a radical, somebody who's really a sort of Bernie Sanders type of guy. And I say, yeah, but the point here is to get somebody through so that you have the ninth vote. There's where I stand.
Okay, so Stephen Gottlieb, obviously the Senate can't stop the president from nominating someone.
That's right.
Now, constitutionally, are they okay to say, well, we're going to wait? Now, let's throw it back to the end of W's term. And there was the filibuster on Alito. And President Obama, who was senator, said, I will go along with this filibuster. How is that different than today?
Well, I was going to go back to the fact that the last election year nomination was Kennedy, who's still on the court. He was appointed in 1988, which, of course, is an election year. The Republicans and Democrats, of course, jockeyed back and forth over the question of the filibuster. But Alito and Roberts were both appointed in 2005, which, of course, was at the beginning of Bush's second term.
But he had, what, 18 months to go, something like that?
No, because he would have served from 2005 to the beginning of 2009. Mm. So he actually had close to 4 years to go, or 3.5 by the time the appointments went through. So they would have had to bar appointments. And they weren't talking about barring appointments. They were talking about the extent to which they would be allowed to put in an appointee that was in sync with the president's values. Of course, he did succeed in getting people that were very much in sync with those values. Alito is much further to the right, or the wrong, however you want to look at it, than was Sandra Day O'Connor, whom he replaced.
So, is it, in your mind, as someone who has studied the Constitution, we have to take a break here in a moment, and then we'll get to the phones. Is it, in your mind, A-OK and fair play to filibuster a nomination?
Well, it's A-OK for the Senate to reject a nomination it doesn't like. That's its constitutional role.
Okay.
Now, the filibuster does get in the way of the democratic process. That's a different issue.
All right. Well, okay. Well, our current president said he was all right with that on the Alito nomination, and that's okay?
I want to point something out real fast, and that is that the Kennedy nomination, it seems to me, was exactly what I'm calling for with Obama. They played it smart. The Republicans nominated a guy who could go either way, and he has gone either way, as opposed to a doctrinaire Bork or somebody like that. We just heard. Remember that the Kennedy appointment was after the Bork Donnybrooks, so they did do what I'm calling for here.
Okay, let's take a break. Stephen Gottlieb is here. Alan Chartok is here. You are there. The number to call is 800-348-2551. We'll take a break. Then we'll get to the phones.
Support for WAMC comes from Ninepin Cider Works, second annual gathering of the Farm Cideries, February 27th. 10 New York Farm Cideries tastings and farm market. Two sessions, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. NinePinCider.com. Empire State English, Colony, and Saratoga Springs, New York, offering classes for all levels of English as a second language and specialty courses for professionals. Licensed by New York State, esenglish.org. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring houseplants, seeds, and seedling starter kits. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Closed Sundays, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, with a second shop now open on Windmere Avenue in the heart of Greenwood Lake. yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. And HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Cat on a Hot Tin Roof by Tennessee Williams, weekends through February 28th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. The number to call, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, joined today by Stephen Gottlieb of Albany Law and Alan Chartok. And guys, before we hit the phones and the lines are loaded, here are a few that came in via email. Paul writes, the Kennedy appointment was after the Bork Donnybrook. This one is...
Yeah, just mentioned that.
Right? Yep. This one is right. From Stephen, who says, Alan, good luck finding a moderate GOP federal judge for Obama to appoint. Moderates have been culled from the GOP. That's from Steve.
And this you can do it.
This one's from Jamie, who says the Republican Party is making a big mistake if they don't allow the appointment of a new Supreme Court justice before the presidential term is up. Right now, they have control of the Senate. Demographics now show that it will be nearly impossible for the Republicans to recapture the presidency. In a presidential election year, and the amount of seats the Republicans have in play means the Senate control will follow the presidential election. This would mean the Supreme Court justice will reflect little of their politics. If the GOP wants to play poker, they should have a hand that makes sense. They're bluffing with all their cards on the table. Good luck with that. That's from Jamie. You guys want to comment before we get to the phones?
Well, I think it's important.
Well, that's what I've been saying that right from the beginning. I've been saying exactly that. Steve?
Well, I think it's important for the president to put in somebody on the court who is going to reach decisions that are appropriate for the American people. And if compromising with the Republicans means compromising on basic principles, I think many of us would be quite unhappy. I think there are some...
What principles?
Well, for example, what does democracy mean? Scalia and Thomas have taken the position that there is no serviceable definition of democracy that could inform decisions. So democracy has been out the window as far as the Roberts Court has been concerned, and indeed, to a lesser extent, the Rehnquist Court before that. I think it's important that there be a justice in that fifth, it would be the fifth seat for either side, because otherwise, without Scalia, we have a 4-4 court. I think it's important that we have a justice for whom democracy is a significant issue and who will act to protect and preserve it.
Over the Constitution?
I think it's directed by the Constitution. Okay. But, I mean, do you do something that is against the Constitution if you act so as to take out one of its fundamental props?
Okay. Stephen Gottlieb is joining us today. Alan Chartok is here. The number to call is 800-348-2551. By the way, before we get to the phones, Orrin Hatch was on one of the news networks today saying, oh, 4-4 court can get things done.
Well, they can make many decisions, but they certainly cannot come to agreement on the hot-button issues.
Okay. Let's go to the phones and John in Pine Bush. John, thanks for waiting. You're on with Steve Gottlieb and Alan Chartok.
Thank you very much for taking my comment. I agree with a lot of what was said previously. I think the next justice has to be young and capable of serving as long as Justice Scalia served. That the candidate needs to be centrist and moderate. There hasn't been balance on the Supreme Court for the last 60 years. It's one side or the other. It's lopsided. And because of that, the judgments that have been made have been polarized our country. We need moderation. We need someone thoughtful that can sway to either side as well as long as the argument is there, the case is made for either side.
John,
and it's essential for our country.
Thank you very much. Now, Alan, first you and then Steve. Is the polarization sure. that John mentioned reflected by the court, or was it driven by the court?
I don't know that I'm smart enough to make the distinction, Ray. I do know this. I think that this has become a political court, period. The Republicans decided they were going to do what they did. They put young people on. John was exactly right. They took John Roberts, practically an infant, and he'll be on forever. Based on age, and the Democrats could do the same thing in finding the right moderate right now in order to get by this crisis. But I have no doubt it's a political court, and now those five guys have been doing political things to basically defend the establishment. It's that simple, and they have done so with pride, and they have all kinds of fancy words that they use. But in the end, it's just as political as every other branch of government.
Steve?
Well, the court has been doing a great deal that, in fact, shapes the politics of the country. So in decisions like Bush versus Gore, obviously, and Citizens United, but many other cases as well, it shapes who is more or less likely to win elections, both nationally and in the states. Then one of the results of that, of course, is the battle over the justices becomes much sharper. That's one of the ways in which the court is polarizing the country. It's also been polarizing the country because it's played a part in the flow of the economy to those who have the most and away from those who have the least. And that is creating a huge disparity, which is part of the polarization.
So if the court swings left, mm-hmm. and there is a 5-4 majority on the more liberal side, the polarization will continue, right?
Well, I think it will in the short run continue, absolutely. But I think what that polarization illustrates is the extent to which the economy and the political situation in the United States has become very unbalanced toward those with a great deal of wealth and power. And over a period of time, if we return to our small R Republican roots, where a large part of it was the understanding that the resources of the country needed to be spread in a reasonable way among the population, we would have a much less polarized country and much less polarized law.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Jay in Albany. Jay, you're on.
Thank you for the line, gentlemen. And I have one question. Right now, President Obama will probably nominate a moderate for the Supreme Court, one that should, in a normal situation, should easily pass muster. But Mitch McConnell wants to wait till after the election. So what is he going to do when President Sanders or President Clinton nominate someone they really don't like?
Well,
a point I have made over and over again, I think they're playing shoot the moon, figuring that what the heck. But they have issues, and their issues are the Tea Party and keeping the right wing happy, and they don't want to lose people on that side. But I think it's a major strategic error for exactly the reasons you have just said and I've said over and over again.
Jay, thank you. Let's go to Jill in Waterford. Jill, you're on.
Hi, guys. I kind of agree with the last caller. I'm thinking that the Republican Party, Mitch McConnell, they're just going to roll the dice and hope that their guy gets in, because I think they're afraid that President Obama is going to put someone there who's a little left of moderate, not quite liberal, but a little left of center. And the fact that their Senate seats, those that are up for re-election, are in jeopardy, I think that's a minor issue. That's just my opinion, that it's a minor minor issue. But I do want to ask one question. Were the last two justices, Supreme Court judges, Sotomayor and the other woman escapes me, her name does.
Elena Kagan.
Thank you. Were they considered liberal or moderate?
It's in the eye of the beholder.
I don't know.
I don't think there's any question they were considered liberals.
Yes. I think they were considered moderate liberals. People in Kagan's case, clearly they thought that she was a person who could work with both sides, and had in many of her previous situations. Justice Sotomayor was a very strong personality on the bench at all times, but her record does show conservatism in some cases and much stronger liberalism in others. It's issue by issue with her, but a very powerful voice on the court. Can I just take a little bit of issue with Alan on the strategy question?
I would love for you guys to mix it up. I'll go outside and take the air from you. Go ahead.
But and no smoking, Gray.
Well, you found me out.
The question is, what is the strategy about? And I think Alan's point is strategy in terms of the presidential election. But the senators aren't running for president. They're running in their own states. And the biggest threat to them is probably in their own state primaries. So strategically, they may be stuck trying to do something or trying to look like they're doing something, which is very much at odds with the strategic perspective of, let's say, the Republican National Committee. They don't have the same strategic goal. And in that respect, Obama may and the Democrats may be in a better strategic position about this.
Alan?
Well, you know, Steve makes a very good point. These guys have a choice. They can be taking on the Tea Party in the primaries, or they can be potentially losing the general election, both of which offer really sad choices to the Republicans, because if they lose four of these seats and several of them are in play in tough states to win in, they lose. They lose their majority in the Senate. That is why, you know, your point is well taken. You do it in the short run for the primary, do it in the long run for the general election. But I'll tell you, if they lose the Senate and the Supreme Court, they're done for a while, long time.
I think that's true, except to the extent that the subsequent Supreme Court might feel itself bound by some of the Roberts Court decisions with allocating rights in the Democratic arena. That could be a very serious problem for a justice. And by the way, the word in the Constitution is judge, but they call themselves justice. And there's a very famous, wonderful episode where Rehnquist was very angry at a lawyer for calling him a judge, And Justice Stevens piped in, "It's all right, counsel. The Constitution makes the same mistake." I loved
that
when I learned about it.
All right, back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551. Daniel in Rosendale, you're up.
Hi. I guess I have two comments. One is that I actually hope Obama appoints somebody not so clearly moderate. I don't think trying to appease the Senate Republicans is going to get him a nomination through. I think they're pretty determined not to. And, you know, there have been some very extreme right-wing people put on the court who've politicized the court.
Yep.
So I would like to see it go the other way. But I do think politically, I would love to see him nominate a black person, possibly Deval Patrick. And I think that just in a strategic way, I think that there is the fear that black voters will not come out in the droves for either Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton the way they did for Barack Obama, and this might be a way to galvanize that vote and solidify it. So that's one comment. The second one I wanted to raise, though, I was just curious. I remember when...
That was actually two comments.
Right. But who's counting?
Well, then I have one more. This All is right. more a question.
All
then.
Right.
When John McCain was running, he kind of proposed something that it become official that every president, when elected, appoint one or two Supreme Court justices. I remember reading a New York Times editorial that said this would be a good idea. So it's not dependent on people dying or resigning or whatever. And that it becomes very clear as part of the election that that's going to happen. So my question is it possible? I don't know how this selection process is it in the Constitution?
Okay.
I mean,
all right. Well, that's one that we can answer. Thank you for the call, Daniel.
The answer is yes and no. The justices that are on the court are on there for life. That's in the Constitution. The number of justices is not provided in the Constitution, and it has not always been nine.
So that's why FDR tried to expand?
Right.
That's what he tried to do. At that point, Congress would not let him do that. But it has been at other numbers. I think the largest number was 10. I think it's been down to 5. I may be wrong about that. So it would be possible for Congress to reach an understanding with the president that he can make a couple of nominations, and the size of the court might well fluctuate as a result of that. So
that's very interesting.
For example, if Obama were to make two nominations now, he would be replacing Scalia, but he would be adding a justice. But since the number can fluctuate, that is possible.
Huh. Alan.
Well, I think it's a lot of nonsense. It's not going to happen. Not a bad idea. Lots of good ideas. We keep getting good ideas about what should happen. What we're dealing with is a here and now situation. And here and now, we got to deal with that. For all those who are calling me out, I have no problem with it and saying, well, I think you should go for a radical, or you should go for somebody who's to the left of center. I think right now there's a particular set of circumstances. Sandra Day O'Connor, for example, she got off the court. That was when things really went south, because she could go from one to the other. I think to some degree Kennedy has it. Most of the time he's in that 5-4 group. But right now we have to deal with what we have.
Can I add one thing to what Alan is saying? I think there is a political problem for the president in this sense. If he goes too far to the left in the person that he nominates, he's likely to bring out the right wing in the presidential election. And it's not clear that that will have a similar effect on the left. So there is a calculus there. I would love to see him bring in somebody who's got a set of clear and good principles. But,
so you are for a litmus test?
There are many litmus tests. Some for the right one,
think raise that, questions fair,
right? Yeah. There is a risk for President Obama there's a risk for any politician in trying to satisfy Gottlieb.
Well, okay, fair enough. Alan, you get the last word before our break here. should politics at all be a part of this?
Well, it's not should, but are they? And the answer is absolutely from FDR, who eventually got his way with the court, by the way. He may not have been able to pack it, but he got his way with the court. It's always been political. Steve, very quickly, was it Justice Jackson who said the court has made its decision? President Jackson has made its decision. Now let's see him enforce it.
Oh, I think that's
the
described.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about, but I think that's described as apocryphal. I'm not really positive of that.
All right, well, let's take a break. Okay, the number to call here is 800-348-2551. Stephen Gottlieb from Albany Law, our own Alan Shartok, and you, and we'll hit the home stretch and your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com. John Lee & Company, offering estate liquidations, house sales, appraisals, clean-out, and auction services for over 40 years, purchasing jewelry, art, gold, paintings, Asian, ethnographic, and antiques. JonLeeAuctions.com. Watson & Associates Occupational Hygiene and Safety, providing comprehensive hygiene safety services and training for industrial, commercial, and governmental facilities. SafetyIsElementary.com. The Habitat for Humanity Restore, 70 Fuller Road, Albany, offering gently used furniture, appliances, building materials, and more. Donations accepted. HabitatCD.org/restore. And Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998, windyhollowvet.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Our number, 800-348-2551. I tell you what, we've been having such fun with Stephen Gottlieb and Alan Shartok that we have not taken as many calls as we could. So let's try to take a bunch of calls here in the last 18 minutes of the program. So I ask you on the phone to make your points very concise and very, not quick, but make your point in a pithy manner. Let's see if it'll work. Toby in West Cornwall, you're up.
Oh, hi. Yes. In all the coverage recently about what a brilliant man Scalia was, I never heard mention the fact that a few years back he made a statement saying that for someone who was on death row facing execution, that it was that, even though new evidence came forward to prove that he was innocent, that it was perfectly acceptable to put him to death as long as he had received a fair trial. And I just wondered, how you feel about that statement.
All right.
I was horrified. The case when that was first brought to the court was Herrera versus Collins, a case out of Texas. I actually knew Herrera's attorney, although I met her later. And I'm pretty sure that he was innocent of the crime for which he was, in fact, executed a few months after the court refused to grant him any help. The court has refused in several other cases, although when O'Connor was on the court, she responded that it was outrageous to execute an innocent person, and her vote in the Herrera case was that she was convinced that Herrera was in fact guilty. I think she was wrong, but she had a very different position than the Rehnquist and Scalia Thomas position on that.
Okay, Alan, you want to weigh in?
Ditto.
Let's go to Betty in Pittsfield. Betty, you're on.
Hi. I'm wondering what the best way is to, for those of us who want to express to Republicans that they should not obstruct President Obama's prerogative to nominate the next justice. He is the duly elected president. Why do they think that we have to wait for the next president to be duly elected? And I'm feeling kind of strident, but you might be able to tell about this. And I don't want that to come across as you know, I need to find a way that's logical to express to these people that what they're doing is wrong.
All right, Alan, this is in your wheelhouse.
Yes, it is. Very clearly, I think what you do is you write to those senators who are in a bad spot, and you tell them.
But does that really work?
Well, let's put it this way. Is it a bad thing? No. Might it help if they get a ton? Yes, because some of them are actually running for president. And some of them are in very tight races in their states. And I think, you know, if they see it, look, I worked as an intern in Congress 1,000 years ago. The congressman I was working for had a guy next door, and he used to come out and say, they're killing me. And I'd say, you know, how are they killing you? He said, well, I got 5 letters on that today. 5 letters. They think, well, you know, it's 100, 1,000 for every letter, but it can't hurt. It's like chicken soup, right?
All right, Betty, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. We are joined today by law scholar, constitutional law scholar, Stephen Gottlieb of Albany Law, and our own Alan Chartok, and you on the telephone line, and Ben and Ryan Cliff. You're next. Ben.
Hi. Hi, Al, Dr. Alan, Ray. I'm sorry, I forgot your guest name.
Stephen Gottlieb.
But I wanted to say that the caller 2 callers ago about executions had an excellent point. That's the discussion we should be having about those type of awful mistakes. But as far as being a textualist or whatever, I think Antonin Scalia didn't do anything too awful. And I think that the rhetoric we're hearing on TV, is a lot of it is very reactionary. And I think that, you know, outside of race relations and liberalizing things that would help especially black people, but also, you know, Hispanic people coming over the border, to try and lift them up and give them extra consideration is good as far as Supreme Court, but the rest of it, everything else, abortion, gun control, you name it, should be done by a state government. And we should really ask ourselves when we have these reactionary opinions, why is our state government so dysfunctional on these critical issues?
Okay.
Let me just...
Well, I certainly don't agree with that.
All right, well, I'll let you both go. Alan, you go first, and then Stephen, and then we'll move on.
Well, very quickly, gun control is a national issue. It is not a state issue. They bring the guns over the line. They go to Virginia. They bring them back here. They kill people with them. It can't just be a state issue. Nice idea. And by the way, that is the position that most of the reactionaries take. Federal government, stay out of this. We don't care. We never wanted health care because it's a state issue. We never wanted gun control. It's a state issue. You know, it doesn't work for me.
Okay, Stephen.
I think we're all textualists and always have been. The problem and the real difference between those who call themselves textualists and the rest of us is they don't want to look at anything else. And consequently, they're trying to draw conclusions from language that does not draw that conclusion. That's really the problem.
Ben, thank you for the call. Yeah. Our number here on the program is 800-348-2551. Tim in Springfield, Massachusetts. Tim.
Hello there.
Hello.
I'd like to see Barack Obama use the bully pulpit and take the armies of people who want gun control, who want women's right to health care and equal pay, who want to end this corrupt political establishment, they're where money buys everything, and appoint somebody like Elizabeth Warren. Let's draw some lines in the sand and put the pressure on these senators to do the right thing.
So you're for the Gottlieb litmus test, then?
I'm for what the vast majority of people in this country want: gun control, a women's right to health care, and equal pay, and ending the political system that is ruled by money, not by the people.
Okay, Steve.
Elizabeth Warren is a great attorney. I've heard her discussing legal issues in a legal forum, and I have the most respect for her. She'd be a great choice.
Alan.
No, I think she'd be a terrible choice. Only because she's wonderful. She's my senator. I voted for her. I think she's wonderful. Nevertheless, that's not what's called for in this particular time. Sure, you could win a Pyrrhic victory and say, take the person who is out. There's a reason she didn't run for president. She knew what the odds would be because of her wonderful positions. Nope, you got to get somebody who is closer to the middle.
Okay, Tim, thank you so much for the call. Over to Anonymous of Johnstown. Hello, Anonymous. You're on.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I guess my my comment and question is, a few gentlemen, is will we ever get back to constitutional law? I mean, for instance, have you ever gone outside and looked in the sky on a clear night and seen all the man-made objects that are watching and listening to everybody? I mean, it's absurd. I mean, you might as well live in China or Russia. And I guess that's my comment and question.
All right. Well, we'll let these guys handle that one. Thank you, Anonymous of Johnstown.
I say thank you very much.
Scalia was actually one who took the Fourth Amendment fairly seriously on the court and reached relatively liberal decisions on that issue. But the Fourth Amendment has the word reasonable in it. And that's one of those instances where the court is given the job to do of deciding what's reasonable. And we have to call that constitutional law. But it's not something where you can just look at the word, look at the event, and well, that's obvious. It's a much more involved kind of judgment to make.
All right. Thank you for the call, Anonymous. This one came in via email. This was from Thomas. Just for context, does anyone know the longest it took to confirm a justice?
No. I have no idea.
No idea. All right. This one is from Alan, not the Alan who's on the show, but a different Alan, who says, maybe I'm thinking an 8-member court is not such a bad idea. No more will Anthony Kennedy wield the swing vote power. Furthermore, no more will we have weak, divisive one-vote majorities. Votes would either be split and affect no decision, or 5-3, a more clear majority. Not such an awful thing, maybe. And that's from a different Alan.
No, there's still a 4-3 possibility, because there's at least one case which Justice Kagan is expected to recuse herself.
Which case is that? I saw that.
I think it's Fisher versus Texas, actually.
Okay.
Because I think that was being handled in the Justice Department while she was there.
Mm.
So you could get a 4-3 majority on some cases.
Now, by law, is she required to recuse, or will she do it voluntarily?
Well, there really is no official statute that says when a justice must do that. There are arguments that they should be subject to the same rules as every other judge of a different court would have to honor, but that has not been the way it's done.
All right, back to the phones we go. Gary in Leverett, you're on.
Yes, I was just thinking that since there's a good possibility that no matter who he nominates, he won't get appointed, he might have fun with it and nominate Anita Hill, who's actually a moderate Republican, and just see the country just go crazy with it.
Yikes. All right. Thank you. Anybody want to, Alan, you want to weigh in on that? No.
No. Right. No, no, no.
Very wise.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. That's a good way to answer. Roger in Schenectady. Roger.
Yes. I was wondering, this is basically a political situation. If the president, I heard that there's two candidates that could be nominated for Scalia's seat. One is an Asian gentleman on the West Coast, and the other is a person of color. Now, if one of those individuals is nominated, regardless of who he is, the Senate says that they're going to he's not going to let him go through. And I was wondering how would that affect the politics of the voter during this upcoming election?
Well, I think these are things that we've been talking about on the roundtable this morning and we've been talking about today. Alan, you go.
Well, obviously, the Republicans seem to have written off a lot of women and a lot of people of color all along. I don't think they would see that as being very different for them. So, I think they're going for it. And those considerations are real, all right. But I don't think they care.
Steve.
I have the sense that the Asian population is more split between the two parties. And so if Obama did nominate an Asian, that might be a more fraught situation for the Republicans. Of course, there are many more possibilities than the two candidates that the caller specified. But yes, I've seen the same reports.
As a constitutional scholar and one who, if you put yourself in the place of a Supreme Court justice, wouldn't you find all this political horseplay just a little bit dishonorable?
You could say that, but it's sort of, I mean, the politics is the self-correcting mechanism by which we hold the Supreme Court in place. That's built into the Constitution.
Mm. All right, back to the phones we go, and Gina in Poughkeepsie. Gina, you're on.
Hi, thank you for this discussion. It's really interesting. I wanted to point out that the thing that keeps interesting me, and it's noticeable more and more, is that Congress made a vow to support the Constitution, every one of them, when they were elected and sworn in.
Yep.
And yet increasingly their arrogance amazes me. I was amazed at how quickly Mitch McConnell responded to Scalia's death and the president's announcement by coming out and saying that, you know, they were absolutely going to try and block any nomination or any name he put forward. And secondly, I don't know if it impressed anyone else, but Orrin Hatch saying that 8 justices could do the job that 9 are expected to do. The Constitution calls for 9 justices.
No, it does not. Steve.
Gina, I just find it amazing.
Gina, it does
that
not.
That he would make a statement like that.
Stephen.
The Constitution does not specify the number of justices. That's open as far.
It doesn't.
No.
Oh,
no.
I'm sorry. I was pretty sure it did.
No,
but
it doesn't.
Why is 9?
No, but your point.
Go ahead, Alan.
Why is nine considered? Wait.
It's just traditional at this point.
Alan, go ahead.
Okay.
No. Your point is extremely well taken in that the Constitution does say that the president should appoint somebody when you got an opening. That is where you're right. And, you know, it does seem that they're not upholding the Constitution when they ignore that. I think that's a very strong point.
Gina, but thanks a lot.
Remember that at the beginning of Obama's first term, the Republicans made it clear that they were going to do everything to make sure he did not win re-election, and they weren't going to give him They weren't going to give him any victories in the Congress. And we could argue about whether that threat or promise to their voters stood them in good stead or bad. Because two things have happened in that period of time. On the one hand, Obama did win re-election, but he lost the Congress.
Mm. Should there be term limits?
Well,
yes.
Okay. Well, there is, of course, a term limit for president. You mean, should there be term limits
on the high court?
On the high court. That
no.
That goes hand in hand with the suggestion of, should we give each president a pair of appointments? That's one way that you could do it, would be by specifying the length of a term.
And another question, if the Constitution doesn't specify the number of justices, is there technically an opening?
There is not technically an opening. It's an opening in the sense of in tradition. It's been 9 justices, I think, throughout the 20th century and a good deal of the 19th.
Mm.
The last time it was more, I believe, was under President Lincoln during the Civil War.
All right. Well, we have not enough time for another call here, only about 20 seconds. Alan, prediction. Will an Obama nomination, A, happen, and B, go through in the next 10 months?
I would have to say, playing the numbers, the answer is no.
To which? He will nominate correct?
He will certainly nominate somebody. That person will make a profound political statement by who he nominates and what happens in the fight over the United States Senate.
Okay, well,
of course, Obama could make a recess appointment.
But if there's technically not an opening, how do you do that?
That's
all right, we're out of time. We'll have to pick this up again. Stephen Gottlieb, great job. Thank you. We appreciate it. Your commentary on this topic will be coming up during Northeast Report. Alan, beautiful. We'll see you here in person tomorrow. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, providing home improvement products and advice to homeowners and contractors supporting local communities for over a century. CurtisLumber.com. Grapes and Grains, Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans with weekly tastings, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesandGrainsWine.com. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Thanks to Alan and Steve once again. Thanks to you for all the great calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Susie Chekai, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for news.